Now joining the program, Matthew Collar of Purple Insider. Matthew Collar, you can find him on Twitter, rather, at Matthew Collar, also the author of Football is a Numbers Game. You can check it out on Amazon. Always check out his website as well, purpleinsider.com. Matthew, I want to start with this. How excited are you for this just to be all over, just to finally get some answers? The speculation is dead, and we don't have to read another rumor.
You know, what I've been saying to Vikings fans that tell me that they're a little exhausted by this whole thing is lean into it. Because for the last 6 years, every draft you went into was, are they going to pick a guard? Or at one point, you know, well, you're going to lose a receiver, or you just lost a receiver. Maybe you'll pick one. And that's kind of exciting. But you haven't been the belle of the ball in a very, very long time, really. Since 2014 is the last time that the Vikings drafted a first-round quarterback, which maybe, Teddy, doesn't seem that long ago to some of us, but it actually was quite a long time ago. We're talking about a decade here since the last time that they drafted a first-round quarterback. So, you know, this is a huge turning point in the franchise's history here. I mean, the magnitude of this is absolutely enormous. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, Kevin O'Connell tenure really rests on one decision. I mean, there's a lot here. And not only that, but it's not like you have to talk yourself into these quarterbacks. I mean, the worst quarterback prospect, according to some people, threw 45 touchdowns and 3 interceptions last year. The second worst was in the national championship game and led the nation in passing. Like, this is very unique. We don't run into years where you can actually look at 5 or 6 prospects at quarterback and go, you know what? I could actually see that guy becoming a star in the NFL. So the Vikings timed this out right. They planned this all along, that this was the time that they were going to look to draft a quarterback in this particular draft. So, you know, I think that, you know, Vikings fans should have fun with it, gathering their opinions, watching these players, reading everything you can. And then finally on Thursday night, it'll be time to find out what happens.
Do you really think Kwesi is sort of picking for his job here? Like the way I look at it is, he hasn't really had to do anything since coming here, because he had Kirk Cousins, he had Justin Jefferson, and I feel like to base his entire career here on this one pick, it doesn't seem necessarily fair, but at the same time, I understand it's the NFL, that's the way it works, but even so, is he really picking for his job?
Oh yeah, you always are. I mean, if you're picking
true.
A guard, you're picking for your job. I mean, when you... We even see it when you have even one bad draft, as they did in 2022, the implications of that. But of course, the quarterback position, it's so much more, the impact is so much greater when you pick a quarterback, because if it doesn't work out, I mean, we've seen other teams like San Francisco miss on Trey Lance and then stumble into Brock Purdy and end up going to the Super Bowl. That doesn't happen very often. Normally, if you draft a bust quarterback, you are not hanging around for more than a couple more years. You know, the one thing I would say, though, about Kwesi Adofo-Mensah's tenure is that we took for granted the fact that they tore down a team that won 13 games. And I always go back to that, because we had all kind of expected it, we just went, oh, okay, they're moving on from, you know, Adam Thielen. They're not extending Kirk Cousins, because that's what we thought they were going to do. But go back and look at that. I mean, how many teams that won 13 games the next year did not extend their quarterback and then moved on from a bunch of veteran players? So, I mean, that was pretty bold, I think, of a plan to have, to really create this competitive rebuild timeline to lead up to this. So I think it was the right decision. But if it doesn't work, then last year looks pretty bad. And then the future looks pretty bad, right? Because, you know, only winning 7 games, even though we, again, all understand what happened, the quarterback got hurt and so forth, that's on your record, that's on your resume, and if you have a couple years in a row that don't go well, then, you know, an ownership that wants to be in the playoffs every year is probably going to make a change. So, but I think we do need to give them credit for executing the plan to get to this moment in a way that I think most franchises probably wouldn't. I think most franchises would have kept their quarterback at a huge price after he won 13 games, rather than trying to set up to draft a quarterback in the future the way that they have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that graphic, the graphic that you'll see of his all-time record, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't say that Kirk Cousins was injured last year. So the record's right. Just going to be as bad. I want to get into the prospects here. And the biggest one, and this was in Dane Brugler's mock draft specifically of The Athletic that I'm sort of keying in on. It's the trade up to 4, and you get J.J. McCarthy. Now, I don't love the price. When you're going to get a quarterback like J.J. McCarthy, you could convince me if it's for Drake May or it's for Jaden Daniels. But for J.J. McCarthy, the price worries me. My opinions on J.J. aside, how do you feel about the price and how do you feel about J.J. McCarthy specifically as a prospect?
And it's kind of like if you're buying a house and you go and you look at the house and you're like, you know, that's pretty good. I would pay X number of dollars. And then you find out what the asking price is and you go, oh, I don't know if it's worth that. But then, you know, you're in love with the house and you really like that backyard and you think, well, you know, we could knock down this wall and we could add a garage to it and whatever. And then, all right, we're willing to pay the price. That's how I will look at it. If, J.J. McCarthy is the Vikings pick, is sometimes you have to overpay for a quarterback. Should you overpay for a defensive lineman or for, you know, should you trade up for once upon a time the Saints traded a future first for Marcus Davenport? Like, no, that's not something you could do because there's a lot of defensive linemen. There's not a lot of quarterbacks, and the fit for your quarterback is so important that you have to be willing to overpay if that's the position that you're in to find the perfect fit quarterback to give yourself the best chance. Settling at quarterback is not something that you really want to do. Now, I personally think that the odds of success for J.J. McCarthy to the next guy down are maybe not that different in this offense. But if Kevin O'Connell said, no, actually, I want McCarthy, and he's the only guy I want other than, you know, Caleb Williams, okay, then Kwesi Adofo-Mensah should pay the price. They should trade up. They should do it. The other key part to remember is that when teams draft quarterbacks 4th overall, for example, they usually stink. They usually have no offensive line. They have no receivers. They have a bad defense, and they're drafting 4th overall for a reason. I just present you with the Patriots roster, right? But that's not the Vikings. They're in a position where they have an elite receiver, a rising star receiver, a Pro Bowl tight end, 2 great offensive tackles. Those are things that teams that draft 4th overall usually don't have. So you can sacrifice a little from your draft capital because you already have the pieces in place that you'd be trying to chase, especially that number one wide receiver. There's nobody more important to this formula than Justin Jefferson. When you already have one of the truly elite players in the league and you're not chasing that, that's going to make your quarterback better. You can give up more draft capital than you want. And then on the defensive side, it was important for them to develop a Josh Metellus, develop Cam Bynum, develop and find Ivan Pace Jr. as key starters. So it doesn't feel like, well, yeah, your defense has actually got all these holes in it. Right now, they're probably the 10th to 14th best defense in the league. So how often can you hand a quarterback something like that who's being drafted at the top? It's very rare. So I think they are in a position to be able to do it, even if it's not exactly the price that you would ideally want to pay.
Speaking with Matthew Coller of Purple Insider, I like that a lot. I feel like I trust KOC more than a lot of coaches in this league. To have a new quarterback like that, he would be near the top of the list. But you sort of mentioned the drop-off between J.J. McCarthy and then, say, Bo Nix or Michael Penix. That brings me to the idea of what about just staying at 11 and 23, and then you can either take someone at 11 and then maybe get another need at 23. What are your opinions on that ideology?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I would call it the alleged drop-off because we don't actually know if that is the case, unless you think that Will Levis was the top draft pick last year. We were told by another reporter that I follow calls it the draft industrial complex.
I like that.
Perfect way to put it. I like to call it the mock draft universe because it's all just a bunch of people guessing what the NFL thinks. And what I have discovered through the years is that what teams have as their preferences are much different than a lot of times what people see or, you know, attempt to scout from the outside world, because what Kevin O'Connell's looking for is very specific. He's looking for somebody that he can go into a room and give teaching points and then go out to a field and see how that person works with them, which, you know, you can't do. Dane Brugler can't do. And it's no disrespect to those people who try. It's just that they're not that good at this a lot of times. So it could be somebody like Bo Nix or Michael Penix that they really like outside of maybe the top quarterbacks that we don't know. Now, I think this year it actually makes a lot of sense, the order that these people have it in, but that's only just my guess. So if they ended up with taking Bo Nix at number 11, what you would hear is every draft analyst would give them a C- and say that they reached, and I would not care 1% that draft analysts thought that. The same people who graded Russell Wilson an F draft pick, and then he turns out to be a borderline Hall of Fame quarterback. Like reaching or whatever they want to call it, I don't care. It's all really about one guy and what he thinks. And that's the guy that's going to be working with the quarterback prospect on a daily basis. And if it doesn't work out in the long run, then draft analysts can pat themselves on the back and talk about how great they are. But I would take my odds better with the team that's done all the research, that sat with the guy in a room, that's given him teaching points, that studied all the film, studied all the data, and made their decision with way more information than what is had by the outside world. So I think that because we're so trained to believe the draft analysts, there will be fans, if they pick at 11 and take Bo Nix or Michael Penix, who go, oh, well, we didn't actually get the best prospect. But go through history. I mean, how many times is it even the first guy picked who becomes the best quarterback? I mean, Lamar Jackson is the fifth quarterback off the board. So I've kind of been like, I don't know. Like I can get talked into these quarterbacks so easily because all of them have great resumes, and whoever it is going to be the guy that your head coach really wanted. So how am I supposed to say, oh, well, you know, you shouldn't have done that. So I guess I look at this, and that's why this draft class is just unique, right? It's just how often do you have QB5 led the NCAA in passing and has a monster arm or which, you know, whether you have it Nix or Penix, it's just not that often. So that's what makes this whole thing kind of interesting, is to see not only who they get, but also how right were the draft analysts who had this specific order of quarterback.
Matthew Collar of Purple Insider joining the program. I've been thinking of the Brandon Bean quote, the Bills GM, who said when he was asked about the Josh Allen trade, he said, well, if he was the guy, then I'm a genius for the trade. If he wasn't the guy, then I'm not here anyway. So that's how I'm looking at the Vikings sort of deal with this trade-up situation. I wanted to ask you about Drake May. I think that dream's dead. I think the commies are going to take him number two. Put a percentage mark on the fans that adore Drake May and are begging him to be a Viking. What percentage is he going to be a Viking on Thursday night?
I'd go maybe 25%.
That's better than I thought, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying is very logical, which is through this entire time, it's been a two-quarterback race, and then suddenly Jaden Daniels emerges. But, you know, I don't think that Drake May fell off as a prospect very much with last year. I mean, his statistics are a little down and his performance had a little more shaky moments, but his team was really bad. And when you go back and look, I mean, sometimes people act like he's this wild man and then he's only got a handful of turnover worthy plays the entire season. You go, okay, well, you know, I don't think that he really destroyed his draft stock, or at least that's my opinion. I guess, again, we're going to find out. And it's very, very possible that it's Caleb Williams, Drake May, number one, number two. But I think what the Vikings are waiting on with their extra draft capital is, what if it's not? What if it is Jaden Daniels, number two? Then you have a chance, I think, to trade up with the Patriots, because New England just ruined a first-round quarterback by giving him absolutely nothing to work with in Mac Jones. I'm pretty convinced that if Mac Jones had had a really good team around him, I'm not saying he would have been a star, but I think he would have been decent, and he showed that in his first year. And then they give him terrible coaching, terrible receivers, terrible offensive line, and then they go, what's wrong with you? And so I do wonder if they are a little scarred or shaken from what happened there, and they would prefer to build up their roster with a ton of draft capital before they go all in on a quarterback. That could be a two-year process for them. They are so far away from being decent. And, or, you know, the Patriots might like Michael Penix just as much as they like, you know, Drake May, and be fine with moving back to number 11 or something. So there's so many, there are multiple avenues where the Patriots would decide to move back with the Vikings at a certain price, and they just need guys on their roster. So I could see it. But, you know, like you said, multiple things have to happen. Washington has to like Jaden Daniels. The Patriots have to not be so in love with Drake May that they would give him to the Vikings. And that does make it unlikely, but I still think there's a pretty good chance that it could happen because the Vikings traded for number 23 for a reason. And I still think that reason was to try to make this big play with the Patriots.
I got two more questions for you, Matthew. First off, back end of the draft here. We don't talk about it because the focus is the quarterback, but this team does have 2 4th rounders. They have 2 5th rounders. That's something. Can you foresee a trade back into the third, or is there any prospects that you like late in this draft? Name me one prospect that sort of piqued your interest later in the fourth round.
So, you know, I was thinking about this. I've never had a draft that I've covered where they had no picks on night two. So I'm kind of hoping Clacy gives me the night off and I could just watch the draft with everybody else. So I'm going to tell you the truth. I have not studied the fourth round players. Sorry, I've been focused on quarterbacks, but
I don't blame you.
I will say this, that they brought in Aaron Jones for a year, right?
Yeah.
But it's not going to be more than a year with Aaron Jones. They like Ty Chandler, okay. But this draft class has some very intriguing middle round running backs, and everyone hates drafting running backs, but that should be true in rounds maybe 1 and 2. But beyond that, you can get some really talented running backs. Aaron Jones was a 5th round pick himself in the middle of this draft. So that's one thing that they could look for, maybe an immediate impact player in the middle of this draft. And then, I mean, you're just everything in the middle rounds is just taking swings at guys, right?
Right.
I think that they should draft like 3 guards in the middle of this because they just can't ever seem to get that figured out. But yeah, I mean, once we get to day 3, if they've got their quarterback, I don't know, do whatever you want. Last year, I thought Brian Flores did a great job of picking out Mekhi Blackmon as a middle round guy that ended up turning out pretty good. You know, after that, you're really just looking for development prospects and potentially depth.
You say that take the 3 guards late. I mean, there's been jokes made where you just take a quarterback in every round. If you got 7 tries, I mean, maybe you hit on 10%. Who knows? Last question for you, though, Matthew. If you had to today, if you had to pick, you know, what happens on Thursday night? What is your pick to happen with the Vikings on draft night?
So, you know, I've tried to come up with a take that I think not very many people have. So if I'm right, then I get to celebrate.
And if you're wrong, you can just say, look, I was trying to be creative. It's no big deal, guys.
Well, if you're wrong, you're just like everybody else.
That's true, too.
People in this space. Yeah. I mean, what's the best mock drafter is going to get 7 or 8 out
exactly.
of 32. So, but, you know, I'm going to go with this. That they stay at 11 and JJ McCarthy makes it to 11 and they pick him there because
wow.
I just have not gotten, I just don't know that teams are going to be willing to give up what is going to be asked to get JJ McCarthy. Mm-hmm. And if Denver can't put it together and the Giants don't want him, there's a pretty easy world to be able to see him getting there, maybe even to 7 or 8 or making a trade up just a couple of spots there. But I think if the Vikings, this is just my bold prediction, if they don't, that they won't have to trade all the way up to number 4 to get McCarthy. But that's, you know, that's what I'm going with to try to be a little bit unique here in draft season.
I like that a lot. I think that's best case scenario. But because he said that, then I'm going to have to make you pick who their 23 is.
Yeah, I would go with a cornerback. Like, They really need to shut down corner. So I don't know, whoever's there, Terrion Arnold or Quinyon Mitchell, I think probably goes a little bit earlier. But this is the thing about sticking at 11 and 23 is there's going to be so many good defensive players that are in the second half of the first round because the entire top half of the first round is all offensive players. So you could get the second best corner in the entire draft or something. That's what I would pick. I would say that they give Brian Flores a present if they get to be able to do that.
I like that a lot. There's Ennis Rakestraw back there. There's Kool-Aid McKinstry, coolest name in the draft, no question about it. It's all going to happen Thursday night. Who knows? We just hold our breath and wait for it. Matthew Collar of Purple Insider, thanks so much for the time, Matthew. Always appreciate it. Have fun Thursday night, and we'll be crossing our fingers, my man.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.